From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today in our weekly update with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, we take a look at some of the architecture and technology of regime change employed by the United States throughout the world and specifically in Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm glad we're getting to this where we're going to get a chance to look at some of the details behind one of the U.S. regime change operations in that region. We talk about them all the time. We've seen one country after another get turned away from their national revolution or their socialist revolution into being looted one more time and wonder how exactly did that happen. Well, here we have the names of some of the payees of these millions of dollars dumped into Nicaragua by U.S. government and some private foundations.
Yeah, and I think it's important to put this in the regional context before we get into the detail of how it was done in Nicaragua. And the important thing about this document that we're going to talk about is that it's an internal U.S. embassy document that details expenditures that are not itemized in the report that is given by the embassy to USAID and made available, presumably, to legislators and other people interested in the issue of accountability of the use of U.S. government funds back in the United States. So essentially what you're dealing with here is a report that has been leaked to a local news organization here in Nicaragua called Radio La Primerissima. It details the use of what's essentially a slush fund, in this case a $15 million slush fund. Damn. Of money that was dispersed between 2017 and 2018, at precisely the time that the U.S. government was working through its local proxies here to try and stage a coup, an extremely violent coup. But before we go into the details of that, and it's important to remember that what you're dealing with here is a standard modus operandi, a standard way of doing things from the United States government that it applies around the world, not just here in Nicaragua or the region or Latin America and the Caribbean. And you can see it at work here in Latin America. You can see it at work in Bolivia, for example. You can see it at work in Ecuador. You can see it at work certainly in Venezuela over the years.
Right.
In any country, as you said, any country that tries to follow an independent path not to the liking of the United States government and its European allies and other allies, that government becomes a target for destabilization. And one of the key ways that that the U.S. government assists the destabilization process is by using NGOs and local movements, social movements, that are projected as being independent. And this is the case across the board, from Bolivia to Nicaragua to Venezuela to Ecuador. Whenever there's an Ecuador during the time of Rafael Correa, any time there was a revolt or a social disturbance or conflict in those countries, you always at the forefront were these non-governmental organizations of one kind or another, social movements. And it turns out that they were all on the U.S. payroll.
Yeah, all the money comes through the local embassy or whatever. I just want to for people to understand this. You know, I said, I forget if I said $15 or $30 million before. You know, I'm thinking of the whole region. But in fact, you have only less than 6.5 million population in Nicaragua, roughly, of 2019.
Yeah.
And so you got $15 million there. So if you have 100 million, I think I said it's right, like 100 or hundreds of millions of dollars. In Latin America, the target of this is a population of about 650 million people, you know, 500 million to 750 million people. And so the U.S. is probably dropping somewhere between, you know, 500 million to multiple billions of dollars in the region altogether, looking at them dropping 15 million into a place with 6.5 million people. So it's a lot of money, a lot of resources.
And in Nicaragua, that's a fabulous amount of money. So what happened in April 2018? There was a supposedly spontaneous uprising against what was supposedly a brutally repressive government here. And it was all autonomous and spontaneous. And now we know that we have, nobody here who was observing what happened actually here and who wasn't a part of the opposition. Any independent observer could see that the whole media narrative of what was happening in Venezuela was completely false.
Right.
But we never had, until now, the nuts and bolts of the details of how the United States paid for it all.
Right.
And now we do. And so if you look at the list that's on our website at Tortilla Consal in a piece called Organizations on the U.S. Government Payroll, you can see the three main human rights organizations that were practically the exclusive source of the information that the Organization of American States used to condemn the U.S. government. Those three organizations, through 2017-2018, received over $3 million.
Jesus.
Now, that is a huge amount of money. So what does that mean?
It means they're a front for the U.S. State Department. That's what it means.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what you have is this kind of closed infinite loop, an infinite feedback.
Right, that's right.
Whereby the Organization of American States sits as judge and jury, and the prosecutor, paid for by the United States overwhelmingly, and the prosecution consists of local Nicaraguan human rights organizations who are also funded by the United States to the tune of $3 million for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, and you know, how sweet is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, and that, so that's, so what you have there is a totally fabricated human rights pretext that, I mean, if you look at places like around the rest of the world, for example, take Thailand or take what happened to Libya or what happened to Ivory Coast in West Africa.
Right.
If you look at the way all those operations happened, you'll find the same thing. You'll find that the governments were subject to in many cases over a decade long psychological warfare campaign by NATO country news media, from the New York Times to the Guardian to La Stampa in Italy to wherever you like, and at the same time that media campaign by journalists who are totally in the pocket of their corporate ownership, who work hand in glove with the NATO intelligence services. Did you ever see that testimony by a West German journalist who in detail went into detail about how in Western Europe all the main news organizations are in
the CIA's payroll? Yeah, I did see that. Yeah,
did you see that? Yeah, well, and that's what we're talking about. And now here you have the chapter and verse of how the United States, through USAID and other associated organizations like the International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute, the National Endowment for Democracy, they're all funding these non-governmental organizations that are essentially part of the same phony reporting institutional framework.
Mm.
Of which the corporate media also, and many alternative media too, are an integral part.
Mm.
And so if you look in relation to that, if you look at the graphic that I sent you, that unfortunately our listeners can't see, there's one group there called Grupo Cinco. Can you see that?
Yes, I see.
Now, Grupo, yeah. C- Grupo Cinco also, just through the period 2017-2018, received $3,247,000 just for that 12-month period, 2017-2018. Now, what is Grupo Cinco? Well, Grupo Cinco is owned by Carlos Fernando Chamorro and his family. It's an NGO. Now, Carlos Fernando Chamorro is an extremely prominent member of the very wealthy oligarch family, the Chamorros. And he's received this money, over $3,200,000, to run his, what essentially, it's a non-governmental organization, media octopus. It's got fingers going all the way through Nicaraguan society one way or another.
Right.
And he runs this site called Confidencial. Now, Confidencial, if you read the New York Times or any of the NATO media, it's always referred to as Confidencial, Nicaragua's independent opposition media outlet. Right? And so this independent Nicaraguan opposition media outlet has now been shown to have received, just in 1 year, $3,247,000 directly from the United States government. Right? So that's so much. So what are the New York Times going to do? Are they going to continue referring to Carlos Fernando Chamorro as an independent journalist? Of course they are, because they couldn't tell the truth to save their lives. You always know when Carlos Fernando Chamorro is lying, because right. He opens his mouth.
His mouth is moving. Yeah, right.
look at the way the United States is very systematic in its destabilization funding. It funds the human rights organizations, practically elevating them to monopoly status in the area of human rights.
Right.
It funds the media organizations. It funds, at the bottom of the list, as you noted, there's when we were talking earlier, there's a line item for something called Movimiento Campesino, $239,878. Well, Movimiento Campesino, what are they? They are the anti-canal movement.
Right.
The anti-canal movement, the NATO media always project as this independent rural workers organization led by heroic impoverished campesinos like Francisco Ramirez and Medardo Mairena. Right, well, now we know that that's a lie. Here in Nicaragua, everybody knows, anybody who's honest, who reports honestly, knows that Medardo Mairena is an individual convicted of mass murder because he organized the murder of four police officers and a primary school teacher in the town of El Morito,
right.
In July of 2018. He was convicted for that crime, along with a guy called Pedro Mena and others, and they were sentenced to a total of 100 years in jail. And that was subsequently, as a result of a very bitter to swallow amnesty, they were released from jail. And that was a very bitter pill to swallow for people in Nicaragua. But for the sake of promoting peace and reconciliation, the government took that measure in order to try and lower the levels of conflict in the country, which they've done quite successfully, but at that price of letting go outright mass murderers like Medardo Mairena. The other woman involved in that anti-canal rural workers movement, Francisco Ramirez, is a well-known local landowner. She has a trucking business. And when they were running the roadblocks in 2018, preventing the free movement of people in the United States, her vehicles passed through, and those of her allies, her transport business, was operating normally. And anybody else who owned a truck in the area that she controlled at that time, had to pay her a fee, a toll, in order to be able to get through her roadblocks, right? But she and Medardo Mairena always projected as independent rural workers activists, and there they are, getting on for $250,000 worth of funding. Mm. For their nefarious activities. Now, another one, and also a very interesting one, that there that received over $200,000. You can see a foundation called Fundación Popol Nah. Now that means the Popol Nah private foundation. Now that foundation is owned by a woman called Monica Baltadano. Now Monica Baltadano projects herself as a super revolutionary. She always tries to distance herself from the social democrat wing of Nicaragua's opposition because she always appeals to the more revolutionary elements of the European solidarity sector who are always concerned about, you know, who can they legitimately support,
right,
who has real revolutionary objectives. That'll always be among their primary concerns when they're looking at who they should collaborate with and who they should support. Mm. And so you're talking about the world socialist people and Trotskyists like William Robinson, that academic there in the United States,
right.
Eric Toussaint, the right. Trotskyist socialist in Belgium. They have all been vehement, outspoken supporters of Monica Baltadano.
Right.
Right? So there she is. She's there on that list. She and her foundation received $200,000 from USAID.
There you go.
How revolutionary.
How surprised are you, though? I mean, you know, this is what we get. We get people that come out and they hold themselves out as, you know, I have the best credentials for being the, you know, the most radical and the sanest and, you know, the most revolutionary, et cetera, et cetera. I'll keep the Sandinistas honest. I don't have to contaminate my psyche with actual governance.
Right.
And yet I'm not, you know, one of these armchair types either. I'm watching, I'm analyzing, I'm applying dialectical materialism. And when the Sandinistas are off the ranch, I'll call them on it. And then suddenly, when the U.S. blows a whistle somewhere and says, okay, everybody, time to go crazy, when the lunatics are putting wire across the road so that people on their mopeds get sliced up and killed and stuff, when other lunatics start shooting at the police and throwing Molotov cocktails, etc., when people inside the Sandinista Party start to complain about, you know, imperial designs by the family of Daniel Ortega, etc., when all of these stand up and start singing their song in some sort of atonal chorus, that's when this guy comes along and says, you're right, you know, I was willing to tolerate anything in the name of the revolution, but this time he's gone too far. And that is like this, I guess that's the close of the opera, and the people are supposed to rise up and, you know, basically restore Violeta Chamorro, I guess, as the new revolutionary leader. I don't know where it goes from here.
Right. No, and you're right to point that out, Don. You're right to point out that we shouldn't be surprised. The thing that's so interesting about this is that we actually have the numbers.
Right.
Before, until we got this information, we knew what they were. We knew that they were stooges for the United States government.
Yeah.
And their government-associated organizations.
But this is the playbook for... We could never say. Right.
And this is how much they...
Yeah.
This is how much the government thinks they're worth.
This is a playbill. You know, we went to the theater. We saw the opera. These are the actors. And, by the way, they posted their salaries.
Right. So, yeah. I'm sorry to spend so much time looking at that, but it just seemed to me a fascinating insight into the nitty gritty of how the United States pulls off its regime change stunts throughout across Latin America and the Caribbean.
Yeah, including a snapshot of the budget.
It'll be very interesting to get the companion documents to this one from Bolivia in October of last year, you know, and so that we could compare what happened, how much the USAID and its associated outfits paid to the Bolivian counterparts of the Nicaraguan NGOs we've just been talking about.
Right, that's true. Yeah, you know, because I'd like to see the list of generals, for example.
Oh, right, yeah, well, and the same in Honduras. Right. During the Honduran coup, and I've forgotten the name of the general there, but he's reported to have received $11 million to pull off the coup against Mel Zelaya back in 2009.
I mean, we don't know. We don't know. Just I'm looking at Grupo Cinco, for example. You mentioned before 3.247 million. That's the check made out by the U.S. State Department or whomever. That who's the payee. That's not necessarily whose pocket the money ends up in. They could turn around and say, "Okay, you three generals, here's $1 million each, and I'm keeping the 247 for being the bagman or whatever." We don't know once it gets past this list how it gets distributed. But there are some other players who, I'm sure there are other lists besides social movement and not-for-profit groupings that somebody else has in another file cabinet there, including a list of generals, for example, like in Bolivia.
And you're unlikely to find any generals in Nicaragua on the U.S. payroll because,
right.
You can never be sure. And look at what happened in Venezuela. There's been a string of former military officials who turned out to be on the U.S. payroll. But the other thing about this particular document is that there's a companion chart that goes with it. That shows which is essentially an accounting summary from USAID, from the U.S. Embassy in Managua to the State Department in Washington, where it does a breakdown of how its budget has been spent. And this $15 million that we've just been talking about is just one line item in that. There's another very interesting line item in that for administrative support. That's the title of the line item. And that line item is $11 million.
Whoa, baby.
And so what they're doing is they're summarizing, they're sending this accounting summary to the State Department as that's their report. That's their financial report. We receive, let's say, $100 million, and this is the breakdown of how we spent it. So you can't actually see exactly on what, back in the State Department, back in Congress, back in, if you get a Freedom of Information, if you file a Freedom of Information request, that the summary is what you'll get. You won't get this detail that we've got from the local U.S. embassy.
Right.
And the other thing to bear in mind too is that, of course, this is just the U.S. embassy, and all the European Union countries, the big European Union countries like Spain, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland, Sweden, United Kingdom has its embassy in Costa Rica, and although it's now left the EU, I'm not sure what stage that's got to. They too have their slush funds, their respective slush funds that they use to finance the local organizations in Nicaragua.
Right.
And so whatever these organizations and their counterparts in other parts of Nicaragua's political opposition have been getting from USAID and USAID's fellow funders like the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, whatever they've been getting from those sources, you can probably maybe not double it, but substantially increase it from what they've been getting from the embassies of the European Union countries. And that is also true in countries like Bolivia, in countries like Ecuador, in countries like Venezuela. And so that's how these supposedly popular opposition movements to progressive governments actually come about. If they didn't have that funding, their level of popular support is nowhere near enough to give them the resources, the material and financial resources that they'd need to mount the kind of opposition that they do.
Right. I mean, even just if you have just say a few thousand troublemakers deployed in key parts of the key cities to raise hell when the call goes up, just the communications infrastructure to make that operate is a substantial piece of overhead. And
yeah.
you have to find a way of getting that into the country and delivering it to the hands of the people who are going to use it. And obviously, that's the purpose of this kind of a thing, because when they're communicating through the news media there, they're not just stirring up trouble among the population to the extent possible, but they're also speaking to their own troops on the ground. It sounds like Thursday is going to be the day, et cetera.
Yeah, and so if you look at the rest of the region, taking into account everything that we've just been discussing over the last few minutes, and if you look at what's happening in Bolivia, for example, and there the de facto government under President Añez has been desperately trying to stall elections, because despite the fact that, thanks to US support, they were able to stage their coup, the fact that it was a coup has become clearer and clearer and clearer with every passing day,
right.
because they do not have popular support.
Right.
They're struggling to hold off elections, although so far without success, because they know that they're going to lose. And the current front runner with something like 41% of the vote is Luis Arce, the candidate for Evo Morales' movement towards socialism, MAS. And it looks very likely that he'd win on the first round if the elections were held in a free and fair way.
Yep.
But what's now happening is that the government there, once the United States has achieved its regime change, it then has that problem. It has the problem that the puppets it put into power do not have popular support. So then they have to find ways of making it impossible for the progressive organizations that, under any free and fair electoral process, would win by a mile.
Right.
Or if not win by a mile, at least win relatively comfortably. And so what is President Añez and her de facto regime trying to do? They're trying to proscribe the MAS organization so that it can't run in the elections.
Right.
So, and so,
like we saw in Brazil, sort of.
Well, yeah, well, and also like Ecuador. And
right.
now President Correa over the last few days, or former President Correa, Rafael Correa, over the last few days, has been condemning the fact that the Ecuadorian government's interior minister has been putting pressure on Ecuador's supreme electoral body to proscribe the political party that Rafael Correa was putting together in order to fight the elections that are due next year.
Right.
In Ecuador, right?
Right.
So that you can see that there's this consistent pattern. And so what happens is that the in countries where the United States does in fact overthrow a legitimate government, it then rigs the electoral process, or it rigs the legal system, as you
right.
said correctly just now. In the case of Brazil, they rigged the legal system. And in Brazil, one of the things that's going on there is that the oligarchs who shooed Jair Bolsonaro into the presidency there, back then one of the ways that they did that was by corrupting the electoral process and using illegal funding during the electoral process,
right.
and breaking the law in terms of electoral publicity and the way that messaging was managed through the electoral process.
Right.
So now the oligarchs find Bolsonaro inconvenient.
Right.
And then
they call him on the sting. In other words, they co-conspire in the commission of the offense, and then they call him on the offense. We have to stop here because
right.
we are completely out of time. But I think I want to stay in this a little bit next week, because there are a couple of things that are unsaid that I can't even allude to now. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I promise that you'll be back next week.
Okay, yeah, thanks a million, John. I look forward to it.
Thank you, too. Take care.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.